Thank you so much, Jubilation Ringers. Again, we appreciate you leading us in this significant way in our worship service. I couldn't help but notice they were missing at least one or so of their regulars and had a guest ringer or two, it looked like to me. I used to play a lot of softball, and when we'd bring somebody in that wasn't usually on the team, we called that a ringer. But they're all ringers, so I'm not sure what they call that. But thank you so much for your hard work and beautiful leadership of us in the service. The year was 1999, and Bo Prosser, who you know by now, he and I were in Chicago during July to attend a week-long conference at the Center for Parish Development. Now, it was an intense learning experience, long days of learning and dialogue, but the night times were relatively free. And it was Chicago, after all. We got out every evening and hit the highlights. It was a really, really fun week. Now, although this is not an endorsement, because I know that some of you probably offend easier than I do, one night we did experience something that I had never seen before. We went to the Second City Comedy Club, which is known to some of us as the AAA farm team of Saturday Night Live, just to see what they did and how they did their work in that place. And we happened to go on that first visit on a night when they were doing improvisational comedy. Both of us were introduced to this thing we'd never seen before. Now, all I can tell you is that my face hurt the next day from laughing so hard that night. You see, if you've never been to improv comedy, it's a tag team or a relay experience performed by a troupe. They might ask the audience for four key words or four themes that seemingly have nothing to do with each other, and in fact, all the better if they don't. And two players will start off the dialogue using one or two of those words, and then somebody will tap somebody on the shoulder, and they'll come in, and the other one will go out, and they take it in a completely different direction, and it gets really funny if it's done well. Now, there aren't a lot of rules to improvisational comedy, but chief among the few that there are is that you can't say no. Whatever somebody taps and brings in with them to take it in a different direction, you have to say yes and go with it. Bo now offers a leadership workshop called What We Can Learn About Leadership from Improvisational Comedy. It was a fun night. And the words yes and are staples of improvisational comedy. It's also what life runs on. Yes and. Maybe no more true than in the kingdom of God. Someone has said, and in fact I've seen it on a bumper sticker, that the world is run by those who bother to show up. Our Lighting God's Path discernment group will come to us in the next several weeks with a proposed plan for the years ahead. We will have what I am convinced will be a crucial and I think invigorating opportunity for a lot of us to say yes for what we would commit to in ministry and mission in the years ahead. A way forward. A plan that among other things, I'm convinced will reintroduce Franklin Baptist Church to her community and to her city. And one that I believe will allow us to be intentional about things like outreach or growth, if you want to call them that. But so much more importantly, a plan that captures most faithfully as we know how what God would have us to be about in these next years collectively. I want to be careful here. I acknowledge honestly that most churches that I've ever been around rely on the work to get done by the same 20% of the people. It's the old 80-20 rule, you know. There are those who like to gripe about that. But then I noticed that they are usually in the 80% who are content over the long stretch of time to sit back and watch. We'll occasionally get high-minded and someone in a nominating process will say, well, she's the right one for us to call on to ask to do this, but she's so busy I hate for us to add one more thing. But then sadly we notice that our busiest people are often our best and most willing people. So we can't shy away. If you are a person who naturally, most easily, and so often says yes, then I want you to listen along. But I'm probably not talking to you today so much. It's the 80%, the rest of the room, that I want to see if I can reach today, because your church and your community are about to need you so badly in the days to come. If you truly want Franklin Baptist Church and your community at large to have a brighter future, then some of you are going to have to come back to life and start saying yes again. You see, there's so many of us who have become just as natural at saying no. Churches are full, especially of retired adults who love to say, well, 40 years ago, I kept the nursery for a few years as my kids were coming through. I've done my turn. Let the younger folks do it now. Have you looked around Franklin lately? And we have younger folks, and they're busy, but they're also working full time, and they have families. You've been there, you remember. And so we're going to need them too. But here's the whole point today. We're going to need all of us. Every one of us. And saying no has become so automatic and so easy for so many of us. I'd love to see if some of us might be willing once again to say yes. We'll have to dust that answer off, some of us. We've been saying no in so many ways that it's become the default now. One obvious way is to hear out the request, to read the ad in the bulletin, and then simply say no. Another way is more unconscious or subtle. We'll hear the announcement in worship or in our Sunday school class. We'll read it in the bulletin or in the constant contact email. But we immediately filter it out by saying to ourselves, that's for someone else. I hope they find the right person for that. That sounds good. Someone ought to do that. But we immunize ourselves from considering that we might need to be that someone. So we move right on and check out the Wednesday night supper menu, or we watch children walk through the room instead of listening, because we've seen children walk through the room before. But we filter things out so easily because we let the distractions of our lives lead us. And we go on and we say, well, maybe someone will do that. Maybe they'll find that. And hey, is my favorite hymn being sung in worship today? And I wonder what's for supper Wednesday night? And we just move on and we effectively say no. In his healthier retirement years, my dad had a running joke. He would often say, your mother really has a way of making me feel like someone. He said, I'll come in the door and she'll say, someone needs to take the garbage out. Or someone needs to fix that thing that's broken. And he said, I know I'm the only other one in the house, so I know she's talking to me, and it really makes me feel like someone, he would say. The Bible is filled with stories that are meant to inspire us. They're meant to affect and change us. These are stories that all kicked into gear when someone said yes to God and to their church. Occasionally I'll do what's called crowdsourcing on Facebook. I'll throw open a question and ask for responses from family and friends, any of you who see the question and decide to participate. And so some of you played along with my latest one a few weeks ago, and I'm grateful. In getting ready for this sermon, I asked a simple question. What biblical story stands out to you as a powerful example of someone saying yes to God? Now, I realized in retrospect that I could have worded that question more clearly, because some immediately heard me ask an evangelistic question. I had one person who responded that John 3:16 was a great example. Well, no, it's not for what I was asking, right? Because I was asking about people who said yes to something God had asked them to do. As you might imagine, the answers had a lot of helpful variety. Some were familiar and unsurprising, but others were obscure and very helpful. Some thought that the Old Testament figure Joseph, son of Jacob and Rachel, was a particularly inspiring figure who said yes. He could have easily felt sorry for himself, seeing as how his brothers had thrown him down into a hole and then eventually sold him off into slavery. And every time he began, you remember the story, every time he began to work his way back up through the system, it seemed like he'd get knocked back down. But he kept working and he kept trying, and eventually he was uniquely situated to help his family and, in fact, to save the Hebrew people. For others who responded, Abraham was an inspirational figure who said yes to God. Now, he and Sarah laughed at first as the grandest part of the plan was finally unfolded to them, but they said yes to God's requests. Noah had agreed way back, some said, to what seemed like a harebrained scheme to build an ark, but the floods came. Gideon did not really know Yahweh, the God of Israel, at all when God called upon him to participate and lead. We ought to pay careful attention to his story. I wasn't expecting Gideon among the responses. By the way, in our Judges series of Bible studies this Wednesday night, guess who we're going to study? Gideon. Come on out and be with us this Wednesday night. Gideon did not really know God at all, but he followed God's leadership into battle, and with his yes, Israel forged ahead during the period of the judges as they tried to occupy their promised land. Mary, the mother of Jesus, stands out to many as an example of saying yes when called upon by God. Her entire young, fragile life changed as God called upon her to be the mother of the divine. Rahab became an unlikely hero by saying yes to sheltering the Hebrew spies. So much a help and a hero that she made it into Jesus' genealogy. The disciples all walked away from jobs, families, and homes to follow this upstart Jesus into ministry as he simply walked along the shore and said, "Follow me." And Jesus himself would be an expected response. He came to earth, God incarnate. He lived among us and taught by his words and by his example. And then, here's the compelling part, he began a slow process of handing himself over to be sacrificed. In John's gospel, for instance, Jesus' process of being betrayed, arrested, and crucified takes 11 chapters. He didn't have to. He had the divine power to walk through a crowd that intended to do him harm in his home church. And yet Jesus, when the time came, handed himself over. Have you ever considered that Jesus had a choice in all this? You heard just a few minutes ago as Ron read the words of Isaiah 6. As this prophet is said to be in the presence and glory of God before he was a prophet. And at the mere prospect of being in God's presence, Isaiah admits for all of us that he isn't perfect. "I am a man of unclean lips," he says, and "I live among an unclean people." But God demonstrates a willingness right then to touch us and to make us exactly what is needed for the moment. And then God calls out in that story you heard, "Whom shall I send?" God asks. And Isaiah responds by saying, "Here am I. Send me." And God simply says to Isaiah and to us, "Go." That's our call. Still is today. If Franklin Baptist Church is to have a bright future, if you want this place to be here for tomorrow's generation, your children or anyone else's, will have to be like Isaiah and these other biblical figures. I want to encourage you to do something important, though. I want you to bring these names, these great names from the Bible, down off the pedestals that we tend to put them on. Because if they're only great, then we really have nothing to learn from them. But when we allow them to be people just like us, then God's calling upon them becomes exactly what it is. God's calling upon us, too, because it is. If your default is to just say no, then God will move on to somebody else. That's not my editorial. The Bible is clear on that count. God is going to accomplish what God will accomplish. But let's look at what that really means. God will get the job done even if by someone else, by moving on from an unwilling fellowship, an unwilling or unproductive church, an unwilling or an unproductive city, God will move on. Now, is that the future story that you want us to write in these next days? I don't think so. We aren't scheming in the lighting God's path process. We aren't scheming an action plan that is designed to overburden your life. If enough of us put our hands to the wheel of what God has for us to do here in Franklin, it'll be far more exciting than a bother, I promise you that. I may have already told you about my friend George. Not the friend George you may remember from a previous sermon, but another friend. This George is over 60 years old now. He's in the twilight of his working career. He is now the general manager of a wildly successful restaurant group, but he sure wasn't a churchgoer. Hadn't been to church since his childhood. And some of our members at one congregation that I served used to eat in one of his locations regularly and had become friends with him. And once upon a time, he had sung in school chorus and had always loved good music. And for years, on Monday nights, they'd go to his restaurant and they would tell George, "Hey, we have a pipe organ. We have good music. You ought to come. You'd enjoy it. It's classical. It's traditional. Come and be with us." And one day, he surprised everybody and showed up. He sat in the middle section toward the back, and he just took it all in. And sure enough, he liked what he heard enough that a week or so later he came back and he sat in the middle section toward the back and just took it all in. And this went on for weeks, and slowly but surely, George became a regular attender. One day he surprised everybody again. He had begun to feel like that even the sermons might have something for his life. And so he came down the aisle and joined the church one Sunday during the hymn of response. And eventually he tried a Sunday school class because somebody invited him. And one Wednesday night, he really surprised everybody. He showed up for choir practice. He told his friends who were in the choir, he said, "I feel like a spectator, and I don't want to just be a spectator. I want to be a part of what you're a part of. I want to do what you're doing because I enjoy it so much." We baptized George. Someone shortly after that asked George to be a greeter, and he did. George would stand out in the lobby of the church and welcome other people who were coming there for the first time. And later, someone asked George to serve on a task force for something we were working on, and he did. And then, here's the big part. Someone asked George if he'd go on the church's mission trip that was coming up. He had a lot of reasons why he wasn't sure about that, but when the group eventually flew out, there was George among them on that airplane, convinced he shouldn't, but going anyway. Funny thing how that worked out. When the group came back in about a week from working with inner city children in a dangerous Miami neighborhood, there was George giving a testimony to the church about his experience. He told about what he did and about how God had used him, a restaurateur, to keep the nonprofit that they were partnering with open because the health inspector dropped in unexpectedly. And the health inspector that day was ready to shut that nonprofit down because of some electrical problems, some malfunctioning equipment, and some other issues they had in the kitchen. But George negotiated with that person because he knew how. He developed a timeline and a plan and a solution. George challenged the rest of our group to raise the money to replace the faulty piece of equipment before they ever got on the plane to come back. And when he gave his testimony about that week, he said to us, "I'll never let another group go out to do a ministry like this without me again. I won't let it happen." And then he said, "Thanks for asking me to say yes, even when I tried so hard to say no." So we know Isaiah's story from chapter 6 well. The humility, the reluctance we're familiar with. We trot that out at nearly every deacon or ministerial ordination. We got that story down. But if we move forward to Isaiah 61, nearly to the end, here's what Isaiah sounded like later, long after he had said yes. He has reckoned with his saying yes, and then some. Isaiah says, "The Spirit of the Lord God is upon me, because the Lord has anointed me. He has sent me to bring good news to the oppressed, to bind up the brokenhearted, to proclaim liberty to the captives and release to the prisoners, to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor and the day of vengeance of our God, to comfort all who mourn, to provide for those who mourn in Zion, to give them a crown of beauty instead of ashes, the oil of joy instead of mourning, the mantle of praise instead of a faint spirit of despair." This is the testimony of one who had borne the heavy call of God and is glad. Like my friend George, he sacrificed of his comfort in order to say yes. But doesn't what he feels called to, as we heard in 61, sound good? Doesn't it sound like he's at more peace because once upon a time he said yes? When we all hear the final plan from the Lighting God's Path team, it's going to sound an awful lot like those things that Isaiah was so grateful to have been called to do. So get ready, church. Every last one of you will have a place and a call that challenges you, and I will too. We need all of us at our willing best. I don't want God to move on and use someone else. And I keep on thinking about that saying that I saw when I was stuck in traffic behind a car. The world is run by those who bother to show up. Our hymn of response is number 483. Hark, the voice of Jesus is calling. If you're able to, take your hymnal. We're going to join our voices in just a minute. But you may also have a decision you're ready to let everybody else in on. You may have decided that you've been visiting this church long enough that you want to affiliate your life with it. You may be someone that our members don't even know is not a member here. But this is the congregation you want to stake your future with. You may have a decision to let Christ be the Lord of your life and to join our church for the first time. Whatever may be your decision, if you need to come down here, I'm going to be waiting for you. Otherwise, where you are and as you're able, let's stand. Hymn number 483, Hark, the voice of Jesus is calling.